Andy said that he and I have not always agreed about history, and he's right on. But I'm not against history. And one thing I learned some years ago when I was traveling with the CLP tour, we would do these workshop tours. At the end of every day, we'd get these evaluations back. And we would get on the bus, and we'd start heading to our next stop. And the first thing we'd do after we got on the road is go through those evaluations and see what our evaluation was. And what I found interesting is there were three of us men traveling together, and one of those men, if he got 5 stars or a five, I'd get a real low number. If I got the high numbers, he got the low numbers. Almost never got high marks from the same person. The third brother, he kind of middle lined. He never got high marks or low marks. The thing I learned from that is that I think differently than Andy. Andy and I have worked together on and off over the years. I've enjoyed working with him, but we approach life from very different angles. You need his angle, and I'd like to think he needs mine once in a while. This morning, or this week, and next week, as we study godly order, one thing I would like for you all to be thinking about is how you can get me into a corner. I want you to see if you can get me into a corner with hard questions, and I'm going to do my best to stay out of the corner, and if I start getting in the corner, I'll go ask Andy, and I'll go ask Brother Michael, and I'll see if we can keep myself out of the corner. But the thing I want you to get is to feel free to ask questions, even if it doesn't seemingly directly pertain to the class that we're in. I want to see if we can answer your questions. Today, I'd like to look at the basis of godly order. That is where we're starting out, foundations for godly order. And I'm going to start by telling you a story that happened about 6 years ago. We used to live here in Red Bluff, and we lived down south of town. And we lived down there, and one Saturday afternoon, our neighbors, Paul and Sheila, gave us a call, and they said, hey, our grandchildren have gotten too big for this little electric four-wheeler, and we would like to give it to your son. I'm like, okay. I was okay with that. So we agreed to come the next day, Sunday afternoon, after church, and come pick up this little four-wheeler. So after church, we went for a walk and happened to end up at Paul and Sheila's. And there parked in front of their garage was this little electric four-wheeler. And we were standing there visiting, and Jethro was there eyeing this four-wheeler. He didn't know anything about it. So he was there eyeing this four-wheeler like little boys do. And after a bit, Miss Sheila came over, and she bent down, and she says, Jethro, would you like to go play with that? And of course, his eyes got happy about it, and he was very happy to oblige and go sit on this four-wheeler. And he was sitting there, playing with the little knobs and levers and looking at this. And after a little bit, Paul says to him, he says, see if you can make it go. And he kept fiddling with it, and after a little bit, it went forwards. And boy, his grin got big, and he figured out what to do to make it go forwards. And he was there driving it around there in front of the garage, having fun on it. And after a little bit, after we'd visited a bit, Sheila comes over and bends down to Jethro and says, Jethro, would you like to take it home with you? Well, he lights off of the four-wheeler and comes over to me and he says, Daddy, may we take it home? And I was like, yeah. And his eyes were just gleaming. And he was delighted to take this home. So we rode it down the street and got it home and we put it in the garage and I showed him how to charge the battery and gave him some rules about how he was supposed to use this. And every morning, as soon as he was able, he'd go out there and he'd be riding this four-wheeler back and forth in the drive. And after a bit, we let him ride there on the road because it was right at the end of the street. And he was just having a blast with it. And several days after he got it, maybe a week, I was sitting there in my office working and I looked out the window. And there was Jethro, had his four-wheeler properly parked at a curb, just like at about a 45-degree angle, just like you do in a parking lot somewhere, like a car somewhere. And he was standing about, I don't know, 4 or 5 steps away from it with his arms folded, and he was just looking at this thing. And he just looked at this thing. And after a bit, he moved around, and he just looked at this thing. Now, how many of you fellows have any idea what was going through his head? What was going through his head? I'm sure all of you have experienced it at some point.
That is my four-wheeler?
Yes, this is my four-wheeler. And I just can't believe my good fortune, my luck, whatever you want. He just couldn't believe that this amazing machine was his. It was so very good. Open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1, the last verse. I get this mind picture of God doing something similar to what Jethro was doing. And I don't want to be sacrilegious here, but here in this verse, it says that after God had created the world and everything that was in it, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. I get this mind picture of God standing there with his arms folded, looking at this world that he had created, with this sense of satisfaction, with this sense of awe that my son had, that it was so very good. As we look at this, as God was looking at this, and he saw that it was so very good, there were several things that were already in place when he saw that it was so very good. The institution of marriage had already been put in place. On the sixth day, God created man and woman. And I would understand that it was on that day that the first marriage took place. So you have the first wedding having taken place, and God was looking at it, and it was very good. On the first, at this time, before the fall of man, at the end of the first week, as God looked on, the headship order was already in place. You had God, who was clearly in authority, giving instructions to Adam and Eve. This is what you should do. This is what you're not supposed to do. So he was obviously in authority. And we also have woman had been created to be a helpmeet, or somebody that was a suitable helper for man. If you look over in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, you find that verse. It's often read at weddings. And while it doesn't say it specifically here, if we look into the rest of the scriptures, we find that you had God, you had woman, and between them you had Adam. You had man who had a responsibility. If you were to look in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, you'd find that Adam was first formed and then Eve. And this was given as a reason that women are to be silent in the public assembly, because Adam was first formed, then Eve. So we have the headship order coming out. Later in Genesis chapter 3, verse 9, where after man fell, you find that the first person God spoke to was Adam. He says, "Adam, what happened?" So the headship order was in place. The second, or the third thing that we have here is we have the dominion mandate had already been given, that man was supposed to subdue the earth and have dominion over it. That's in Genesis chapter 1, verses 28 through 30. It says this: "And God blessed them," that is man and woman, "and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so." So we find here that God had commanded Adam and Eve that they could use the earth to subdue it and use it to supply for their needs. So the dominion mandate had been put in place. Moving on, it looks like it automatically switched for me. I'm not sure how that happened, but the next point is there was already work and responsibility that had been given. God had told them, put Adam into the garden to dress and to keep it. They were given the responsibility to work. Woman was given the responsibility of helping man. Another thing that was also already in place were the natural laws. They had already been set in place, and they haven't changed to this day yet. And probably most importantly, another thing that had been set in place at this point was man had been given a free will. God had given him the opportunity, as Andy was already speaking some about this morning, the opportunity to make a choice and to do as he chooses, even if it went against God's will. The next day, God would institute a day of rest. And as God looked at these orders and many other orders that he had put in place, he said it was very good. And I want you to remember that because it is foundational to the order that we teach, will be teaching in the coming days. Because these orders were in place before the fall of man. They are not the result of the fall of man. These creation principles are the result of order and foundational to order. Moving on, I would like to look at some of the foundational orders that are out there. Not so much that we will get something practical out of them, that we can go home and apply this today. But just so you can see that there is order every which way we turn. There is a natural order. The natural order is the order that we see in nature. If we look in Romans chapters 1 and 2, we find that God has given us three ways of knowing Him. He has given us our conscience, He's given us nature, and He's given us revelation through the Word, through the prophets, through the law, through Christ. He's given us those three different ways of knowing Him. The natural order shows us God through nature. The order that is in nature is what I'm referring to when I say the natural order. Keep that in mind. As we look around us in the natural world, there are many observable orders. These are the four orders we're going to be looking at. There's the order of day and night. There is the order of seasons. You know, we expect that in, 7 hours from now, 6 hours from now, the sun's going to go down. You can go look it up. They can tell you exactly to the minute what time the sun will go down around here, what time it's going to disappear behind the horizon. They can tell you exactly to the minute what time it's going to come popping over the other horizon tomorrow morning. Those are natural orders. The seasons, they will come and go. And, you know, we live in a time where there's a lot of concern about what we're doing to the environment. And, you know, they give you the idea that, hey, if we don't do something about it, the seasons are going to disappear. Wrong. They're going to continue until the end of time. There is also the order of predictable celestial events. You know, here 2 years ago, people traveled from all over the world to specific places in the United States so that they could see a solar eclipse. They could predict it with accuracy, when it was going to happen, where you needed to be. And again, this shows God's order. There's the moon phases and other celestial orders. With the celestial events, one thing I want you to keep in mind is that we set our timepieces against them, not them against our timepieces. Moving on, there are gender distinctions, and we'll speak more about that under identity and some of that later on. But there is very clearly male and female, and each of them have specific abilities and specific inabilities, and that is an order that will not change. I don't care what the government says. There is the order seen in taxonomy. If you don't have to study biology long until you find out that they have these classification systems, and I'm not sure if I'm saying it quite right. I've always struggled with saying it, but there's the Linnaeus classification system that is a very common one, and in that you have domains and kingdoms and phylums and families and genuses and then species down at the bottom. And you can take any living thing and look at it and start at the top of that, and you say, what domain is it in? And there's some questions you can ask yourself. And then you say, what kingdom is it in? And you ask yourself some more questions. And you can kind of work your way down through there fairly quickly, presuming it is a life form that they've seen before and classified. There are scientific laws that have been in place since the beginning of time, will continue until the end of time. The laws of thermodynamics, the laws of gravity, the laws of life, the laws of motion, the laws of relativity, the laws of buoyancy, and many more. The thing I want you to grasp as we look at the natural order is that natural order shows us that God is a God of order. All of these and many more are based on the orders that we see in nation and they're so orderly, they're so consistent that they have the discipline of science, which is basically the study of nature, trying to determine how you can produce a reproducible result without fail every time. That, you know, if you do this is what's going to happen. And that is based on the concept that there is underlying orders that don't change. Again, I ask the question, where does it come from? It comes from God. The thing, you know, if I go home here in a few weeks and I get down there and I walk into my office and then my office is cleaner than when I left, what do you think I am going to say? Nice thunderstorm. I'm going to say somebody cleaned it up. And it's the same way in life. If there is order, we know that somebody did something. And I'm using a very broad term, and I could almost sound like one of these New Age people that refuses to use the word God, and that's not my intention. But when we see order, order is the result of energy being expended to place things in a correct relationship with each other, and then energy expended to keep them in a correct relationship. Because there is order in nature, we know that there is an energy, there is a God behind it, who is producing order, creating order, and sustaining order. Moving on, looking at social order. Social order is the order we see in relationships. It's the way we interact with those that we live with, as communities, as people. We have social orders here that you subconsciously keep and have under your belt. There's three questions that you ask as you relate to social order. Who does what? Who is responsible for what? And who answers to whom? You know, your answers to these questions will reflect your concept of social order. If I go up to Laverne and say, what is my responsibility here, what would you say? Teach class. If I go up to one of these young ladies over here and say, what is your responsibility here, what would they say, Linford?
To learn.
Now, let's broaden this out a little bit. My wife is going to come here in a little while. What if she came up here and started teaching class? What would you think? What would be the first thing that goes through your mind?
Go home.
Good answer. I like that, Austin. Go home, because we have this concept that women are not supposed to teach in a setting like that. That's part of our social order. But you know, there's people that wouldn't agree with us. You know, a few weeks ago, I was listening to two of my brother-in-laws have a visit. And I was sitting in the same group. My one brother-in-law comes, he grew up in the Amish circles. He's no longer with the Amish, but he grew up in the Amish circles. So he has kind of that background, that social order backing him. My other brother-in-law grew up in Kenya. He's a native-born Kenyan. And they were discussing a marriage situation that one of them knew about, where it was a newly married couple, and the young man really wasn't doing his responsibility, and they were talking about who was responsible to do what in this marriage situation. Well, my ex-Amish brother-in-law, he says, well, you know, he was saying, you know, it's the ministry's responsibility, and it's the parents' responsibility to go talk with this couple and try to help them get things kind of straightened out. Well, my Kenyan brother-in-law, he was like, well, he thought it was the husband's family's responsibility. The husband's family should go sit them down as a couple and talk with them and try to find out what's the matter. And if that doesn't work, then you'd get the wife's family involved, and you'd sit down and you'd talk with the young man as a family. And his ultimate answer was, is if that young man won't listen, you take him out and you beat him up as a family. And if that doesn't do it, then you get the community and you go beat him up as a community, because he's not doing his responsibility to his wife. Well, my ex-Amish brother-in-law's answer to that was when we'd help her get out of the situation. And I tell you that story not because I'm necessarily promoting one way or the other. Well, I am promoting one way over the other. But his idea was that you would help her get out of the situation, help her have an escape route. But I found it interesting, as I listened to them visit, that how these different social orders produced a different response. And what happens is, as you answer these questions, it will determine how you would answer in these situations. It'll also determine what happens in society around you. As a social order becomes ingrained in a society, it affects the rules and the understanding of your community, your state, and even your nation. Here's some more things for you to think about as you think about social order. If I asked you, what is your responsibility to the government? If I asked you the question of how should you respond to a government official? What is the difference between an ordained brother and a lay brother? What is the rights and privileges of a woman, a child, or even an animal? Your answer to those will show us some about your ideas of social order. You know, if you go back 1,000 years, here you go, Andy, you can say I'm using history, but if you go back 1,000 years, you had a very strictly hierarchical feudal system. And in that system, there was very rigid mindsets about who had what privileges. Today we live in a society where all living things are considered equal, while seemingly some are more equal than others. All living things are considered equal. Here's some examples of what has changed in society around us. You know, in years gone by, if you overused or abused an animal, there was not much somebody could do about it. They could, you know, they'd like, man, he's rough on his animals, but there's not much you can do about it. Today, I have a brother-in-law that spent a night in jail, or some time in jail, because his dog's water bowl froze over one night. That's crazy. Okay, and another one is, you know, 1,000 years ago, many places women could have known property. They absolutely couldn't vote, and they didn't work away from home. Today, you know, we see women getting an education, working a job or a profession, and owning property. Even among our Anabaptist circles, and, you know, we might say it's not the best, but it's not like, wow, how did she manage to pull that one off? Because we live in a different social order in society around us. As you young men and you young ladies grow up, one of the questions you have to answer for yourself is, what am I going to do with my life? What is my occupation going to be? What am I going to pursue? In years gone by, that wasn't so much of a question. You were expected to do what your parents did, and that's just what happened. And you know, how many of you own slaves? How many of you know a slave? It wasn't that many years ago that there were religious black men justifying holding slaves and held slaves themselves. How different is that from what we're hearing today? And you can see as you look at these examples that social order changes, because social order is to a certain extent based on the will of man. That's why it isn't quite as stable. But even in all of that change and all of those orders that we would consider improper, we can still see that man desires order at the social level. Man desires the ability to understand who does what, who is responsible for what, and who responds or who answers to whom. And we have a clear teachings in the scriptures on some of these things. There is a standard of right and wrong, God. Woman is man's helpmeet. Animals are to be under the dominion of man and woman. But I want you to remember, as we look at social order, when God finished creating the world and he put his social order in place, he looked at it and he said, it is very good. Moving on, spiritual order. The order that we see in the spiritual realm, we have the Trinity. We have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. That is an order that has, from what we can tell, has been there for time eternal. Besides the Trinity, we have the angels and archangels. It seems that there are certain beings in the heavenly realm that have the ability or have the responsibility to command other of the angels. And then there is the path to victory. And this is a pattern that is more pertinent to us than some of this other stuff. But it is an order and a pattern that we see. Christ's path to victory included Gethsemane, Calvary, and then Easter. Our path to victory includes a broken will, a broken body before victory. Now let me explain that a little bit. As I say a broken will, I am meaning the ability to genuinely say, thy will be done. When we can come before God and say, thy will be done, then we have a broken will. And the broken body simply means that we absorb the damages of sin and do what we can to make them right. We absorb the damage that is the result of sin in our life. And for us, that is seen in restitution and in repentance, not in some form of self-abuse or asceticism. Within those few examples that I've just placed right here, the thing I want you to again see is that there are clearly identified roles, there are clearly identified responsibilities, and there are clearly identifiable patterns. If these roles, responsibilities, and patterns were violated, then things don't work the way they are intended to work, way God intended for them to work. And God has given us clear lines with clear consequences. And just like Adam, if we overstep those clear lines, we will experience the very clear consequences. Spiritual order can be summarized in a single statement. There is a God who overrules. There is a God who overrules. Moving on. Mental and emotional order. These are the orders we see in the responses to life. Many years ago, when I was upper teens, early 20s, there was a fellow that would come down from Illinois. His name was Billy Osmond. He drove a dirty little old blue S10 Chevy pickup, and he had a filthy little old dog that he hauled around with him named Bandit. And he would come into our area because he worshipped Dolly Parton, who was a famous country music singer that had a large estate not too far from where we lived. He was also obsessed with restoring an Alice Chalmers WD-45, for those of you who are tractor, I'm not going to say nuts, but, you know, old tractor folks, you know, that'll give you an idea. He was restoring a WD-45 that his father had bought new when Billy Osmond was a boy. When he showed up, my sisters would run, and us men would do our best to protect them. Because he was one of those people that you didn't have to be around him long. Anybody that was around him for very long would come away saying, man, he's a nutcase, or he's a couple bricks shy of a load, or a French fry short of a Happy Meal, or, you know, something like that. He was kind of, you know, he just was a little bit off. And the reason he was off was because his emotional state was out of order. His mental state was not 100%. You know, as we look back at the beginning, Adam was seeking for a relationship. And God provided him with a relationship to fill that need. If you look around you, you will see people are doing the same thing. They are seeking a relationship. And if that need for a relationship is not filled or is filled incorrectly, they become messed up. With time. That was Billy Osmond's problem. He was seeking a relationship when he went to worship Dolly Parton. He was seeking a relationship when he spoiled his little dog Bandit. He was seeking a relationship as he obsessed over his late father's tractor. He had apparently been very disrespectful of his dad in his growing up years, and then after his dad passed away, he became obsessed with restoring his dad's tractor. He was obsessed with relationships when he tried to, you know, butter up to my sisters and we tried to keep him away from them. His differences were the result of mental and emotional disorder that was a result of his attitudes, his responses, and his choices in life. You know, as we look at, I don't know if I have those here, relationships, attitudes, and responses. Yes, there they are. Those are the three things that affect our mental order. Billy Osmond was seeking a relationship. Moving on, another thing that affects our mental order is our attitudes. You know, some years ago, I was working at putting cool cells into a chicken house there in Kentucky for a man who is my dad's neighbor. His name is Jack Stonecipher, and Jack Stonecipher had this reputation of being quite a short-tempered man. He stayed angry pretty much all the time, it seemed like. Well, I was there working on his chicken houses, you know, putting in these cool cells, and he showed up in his pickup, and we got to talking, and it was right over the time when mad cow disease was the big global health crisis pandemic thing that they were dealing with, and he had quite a few cows besides chickens, and, you know, he was talking about this mad cow disease and how it was horrible that it had dropped the price on cattle and so on and so forth. And then as he was about ready to leave, and he says, you know, if there's such a thing as mad chicken disease, my chickens will be the first ones to get it because I stay mad all the time. That was his attitude towards life. He just had this attitude, I'm going to be mad at life all the time. And he lived up to it, and he was a pain to deal with because he was emotionally unstable. The way you respond, your responses to life that come out of your attitudes will affect your emotional state. You all all know what happens when you do what you know is right. You have that sense of satisfaction. You have that sense of well-being. You also know what happens when you do what is wrong. You have that sense of guilt. You have that sense of shame that comes with doing wrong. So the way we respond to life, in turn, affects the way we think about life. It affects our mental order. And in all of these, and as we understand what the right relationships are, what the right attitudes are, what the right responses are, as we pursue those things by the grace of God, we will have the ability to become more stable emotionally and mentally because we're living in keeping with the order that God has given us. Maintaining order. Several minutes ago, I stated that order is the result of energy being expended to place things in a correct relationship with each other and to keep them in that correct relationship. It takes order to it takes energy to maintain order. Decay and disorder are the natural inclination of nature around us, and to resist those declines takes work. It demands learning and understanding the principles that are behind the orders that God has created. It demands applying what we know of these principles practically in everyday life. It demands a constant attention to what is happening. Are we seeing decay? What is going on around us? It takes attention and vigilance to those things. It demands power. We cannot keep order without some form of power, and we will have to receive that power from outside of ourselves in some form or another. We will need outside help. And it also demands accepting that some things we cannot change. I don't care how badly you want gravity not to work, it will work. I don't care how badly you don't want inertia to keep you moving along at 50 miles an hour when somebody pulls out in front of you, inertia will continue to work. And it's the same way in the spiritual realm, in the emotional realm, and the other things, other realms that we will speak about. There is nothing that you can do to change them. I don't care how badly you want it to change or how badly all of us want it to change. We can't change it. So you've got to accept it, that this is the way God made it, and we might as well learn to work with it. Here's my final practical pointer for you this morning, and it's this. If you want to create and maintain order, you will need help. We all need help. We need the grace of God. We need the help of our brothers. We need the help of each other as we work on it. I got a little bit ahead of myself there, but before creation, the universe was without form and void. As I wrap it up, keep this in mind. Before creation, the universe was without form and void. It was without order and without use. And when God spoke to it, it began to take order and to become useful. In the coming days, allow God to speak to you. He's the basis of order. Just like he spoke to a world that was without form and void, and it created order, he can speak to you and help you find order in your lives. For the coming days, again, this is a review of what I covered last evening. This is our plan. We will be looking at godly order in our lives, probably two sessions on that. Order in our homes. I know most of you don't have homes, but we'll be looking at some principles of order. Y'all are getting close enough to the age. A couple of you here are actually considering whether you should establish a home. Order in our churches, order in our businesses, order in our communities and nations. The last one will be more in our response to those around us and society about us.